Everyone, welcome to Talking Shop Down Under. This is your host Richard Bangs for yet another episode, and here again at DDD Sydney. And this particular live episode, as we sit outside the toilets and watch people enter and leave, which is probably not the best thing in the world, but you know, it's part of the live experience. Talking to Craig Sharkey about JavaScript, this thing that has apparently popped up and everyone's going to be developing on for the next 40 years or so, apparently. Maybe even longer. It's like the new version of COBOL. We're just at the beginning.
It could outlast HTML5.
Isn't HTML5 that's it? There's no more moving numbers. It's just a living spec now.
Yeah, we're going to HTML, but we're not going to be happy with it until 2022. So we've got a bit of scope there.
Excellent. Now, for the listeners, do you want to just introduce yourself?
Yeah. I've been on the web since 95. I've worked with AOL and Yahoo.
AOL.
All those guys. Most recently, I was with Atlassian for nearly 2 years.
Yep.
And I've just moved across to Telstra, and I'm a product lead on IPTV.
So that's the obviously the next big game, I suppose, and everything. So what's...
Yeah.
Can you talk about it much or not yet?
I can talk about it a lot, but I can't show you very much.
Well, that's okay because we're on a podcast, so there's not much to see.
We can talk about it a lot. We're really keen to talk about the fact that JavaScript isn't just on servers and computers. It's now on devices, and those devices are going to become more ubiquitous. So each year we'll be getting smaller and smaller devices doing more and more things. And JavaScript is one of those languages which makes all that activity possible.
All right, do we want to start there, or should we talk a bit more before we do? We might come back to it and just talk about some of the other things you do. So you mentioned Atlassian, and I think most people have come across Atlassian these days.
Yeah.
Great Aussie success story.
Definitely.
Fantastic. And the sort of things that you were doing there is all client-side?
Definitely all client-side. Because it's a Java house.
Yep.
So the opportunities to do mainstream products on the server side didn't exist. That's slightly changing. Atlassian is good at responding to the industry's need. And the industry is moving away from...
As in, they're a small, fast, agile company.
There are parts of the company which are small, fast, and agile. And they're the guys that are responding to different trends.
Okay.
But it's not just about building the product. It's also about building the community. So I was actually pivotal in setting up CJS, the Sydney JavaScript Group.
Mm-hmm.
So Atlassian have been the major sponsor behind that for the last 15 months.
Yep.
So
it's held down in the basement or something.
Yeah, it's held in the basement every third Wednesday of the month, with very few exceptions. You can meet down there and there'll be 50 to 70 JavaScript developers.
Wow, that's a big number for a user group, especially in Sydney. We tend to have... mid-20s, 30s, 40s sort of thing. So yeah, getting up beyond that's good.
And what I've been really impressed with is that it's actually getting harder to get people to put their hand up because they're new. So we're not always getting a continual turnover of people who've come before and haven't enjoyed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite often now you're getting people coming back regularly. We're getting ideas for speakers. We're getting lots of speakers from the community itself. It's a nice environment.
So you're getting I suppose because JavaScript's across all technology platforms, you're getting the .NET guys, you're getting the Java guys, the Ruby guys, and basically anyone doing web.
Yeah, we've had Aaron Powell do a presentation down there already from the .NET front.
You poor fellow.
I don't know. We've had a few people. It's because it's JavaScript, we don't tend to get a big spread. We've had a big crossover one last year at Web Directions. I arranged a big battle between the purists and Google.
Google aren't the purists?
Especially if you ask Dmitry Baranovsky. I always love coming to these sort of events because you just find out that even though you think you knew 300 people in Sydney who were coders, there's another 300. And the crowd that come here are different to the crowd that go to Remix, and the crowd that go to a Google event are all very different. So it's...
Yeah, you can say hello to people in mid-present.
Hi, Jared.
Mid-talk.
Jai.
Someone.
Better edit that one.
We're editing this out, or maybe we're leaving it in as a blooper. I don't know. So the crowd's different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always very enthusiastic as well. There's never quite enough hands on deck to help build the website. But that's because people are busy doing
the CJS website. You're talking about. Yeah.
Each month we put a request out that people get behind it. We've had some great responses, but we're getting those from a smaller crowd base than
just those who are willing to.
Yeah.
The usual people who always put their hand up for stuff.
Exactly.
So what, out of curiosity, the type of subjects that get covered with a JavaScript user group are kind of, in some respects, you think, well, JavaScript's a simple language. There can't be that much to talk about, surely.
Definitely. actually, before we started it, I was concerned that we were going to have 12 months worth of jQuery presentations. So it'd just be jQuery. And we
But you mixed it up and one had like 5 jQuery and a dojo.
Exactly. Or maybe even a YUI. we've had one speaker on that first panel for Google. And then we've had one presentation on jQuery itself by Jared, who's done the presentation here today.
Yep.
But we've had very little library-based presentations.
So what are most of the things turning up then there?
It's more when it's like we've had quite a few nodes and a few backbones. So more of the new uses for JavaScript.
So Node.js is the server-side web server.
Exactly. Yeah.
With JavaScript. And Backbone is what?
Backbone is a MVC framework for JavaScript. It's
a bit like Knockout.js, is it?
Slightly. It's model view and control, but it's not classic MVC that you might get in a Rails environment. Mm-hmm. But it's a way to develop. It's a new methodology with the JavaScript.
Okay, so I haven't run too much across Backbone. I kind of glanced at it briefly in passing and went, interesting, and then put it aside because focus was elsewhere and I've got an attention span like a goldfish. Is there a lot of take up of that, or is it still one of those things that's still figuring itself out and people are trying to figure out the best way to use it?
It's the best way to use situation at the minute. But when it does get traction, it really, really works. It's brilliant for making small fluid websites. So largely you make a framework for it.
Yep.
For the language, the platform, and then you make views that show up inside. So it's really good because it's all done in Java, all held in the same environment.
Mm-hmm.
It can be quite quick to pass information between itself.
And the whole thing happens client side.
Exactly.
Okay. So then the only cross network calls are what, for getting JSON objects, and that's it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So the community is thriving. Around JavaScript. So what's your take, out of curiosity, on the Windows 8 side of things? So the announcement recently for those, you know, we did a podcast on this a few episodes back that people can go listen to, but the whole, you know, Microsoft turning up, they're doing their demo of Windows 8, and they say, well, you know, what's fantastic about all this is that we can develop in JavaScript, and everything's JavaScript, and there's nothing else. And, of course, you know, half of the Microsoft world just went, and you can hear all the Silverlight developers going, mommy, and having a big cry and everything else. But as a JavaScript person,
yep,
not a jQuery person, a JavaScript person, sure. That obviously represents a huge opportunity.
It's always been there, though. It's not a new opportunity. That's not true. If we can get the control we've seen and the potential that's there,
mm-hmm.
then it is a big opportunity because it means we're able to move onto the desktop more easily. But we haven't been held back from the desktop before. There's always been desktop avenues for us to pursue. These haven't been so closely tied to the operating system.
Because you couldn't get enough access to the hardware to be able to do anything
exactly
that would warrant being on a desktop other than just in a web app.
Oh, you have to... if you were using Air, for example, you need to make, when the person downloaded the application,
mm-hmm.
there'd be overhead of having to get the environment to run as well. And mm-hmm. it's the sort of thing that Silverlight developers
yep.
have faced already, and that people can be hesitant to
download a runtime.
Exactly.
Yep.
But once they've got it the first time through, all bets are off and people are happy to use it. And that's going to be the same thing with JavaScript on the desktop.
Except there won't be a runtime.
But you'll also have
Well, I assume we won't know until that's things true. Come out. But
The benefits of using other runtimes is that they, because they're going to be more closely tied to the operating system, they can do things that JavaScript can't do. So the fishy example which we've seen, which is
250 million fish swimming around,
which we can never quite understand why anyone would want to do that, which makes perfect sense in the environment of the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
You still wouldn't want to have those fish making noise without using another technology to provide the sound.
So that's where you want your JavaScript to hook into the operating system to get to the audio API and...
Exactly. Or yep. Silverlight or Flash or mm-hmm. one of those other technologies.
Mm-hmm.
JavaScript is still quite young in its adoption of audio and video.
Yep.
We're a long way off, even though the APIs are there. There's a lot of problems with support.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a long way off from having enough technology ourselves just to cut ourselves off from the rest of the community. So it's not just going to be a single solution. JavaScript always works best when it works with all the best players.
Yep.
Do what we do best, taking the best from everywhere else.
Okay, so changing tack a little bit, we mentioned Node.js before being server-side JavaScript web server thing.
Yep.
Platform, effectively, as it can be used. Microsoft made an announcement last week, or the Node team made an announcement that Microsoft's going to be chipping in and helping out to actually get that thing running properly on Windows instead of running the way it runs at the moment. What's your view on that? Obviously, adds reach.
It adds reach, but I think that it's an unusual situation. I think it's great that Microsoft's behind it. People like Tatham have already shown us how it's not that difficult to get it to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a couple of extra steps in a way you run. Immediately, I don't think it's going to have a great impact because I don't know that the two environments still. I don't think there was a lot of Node developers who were holding back because they're waiting to move on to Windows.
Yep.
So I don't think it's going to be a big push into the Node space because of that, because of the new opportunity. But down the track, I think it's one of those things that it's just a recognition that the technology is going to be useful.
So in some respects, I suppose that helps it get into the corporate server area because, well, maybe, I don't know, I'm just thinking. If you're going to run Node as your web server, then you're not going to be that upset around running Windows Server versus a Linux box or something.
True.
Hmm. Who knows? Maybe you'll be able to run it on Azure.
That'd be good.
Yeah, put it up in the cloud. Everything's in the cloud these days, right?
But you know, you're right, though. From a corporate perspective, it may actually give it that extra bit of polish that it needed.
And having the Microsoft stamp of approval means that people are more willing to adopt it. Same as they've been willing to adopt jQuery because Microsoft's now
said. Or IE7. They've been very willing to... Oh, hang on. Maybe the stamp won't help it so much.
Don't know how to respond to that.
No, I think it's the stamp is going to be useful.
But not revolutionary?
It's going to... There are people who think it's fantastic and people who... It won't necessarily have any impact on it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people now are understanding that Microsoft are making so many changes in the way they approach the new web that the trick is to try and put old Microsoft and old attitudes behind us and just look at what they're doing now.
So in taking a slightly different approach, if we think the desktop, and let's say Node can run on Windows.
Sure.
The deployment of JavaScript-only applications into Windows 8
mm-hmm.
that do database interactions and so forth might become a little bit more viable by installing like a mini server and your client inside the one Windows box, potentially.
Definitely.
That could definitely help. All right, so let's jump tack again and come back to maybe the web TV,
sure.
IPTV.
IPTV, yeah.
What do we call it these days?
IPTV.
IPTV.
Yeah.
So how does that all happen? What's the secret sauce behind that? Because there's obviously multiple JavaScript engines and everything else on different devices, and they have interop issues, I assume, and speed issues. And
We haven't yet got a single platform that runs across different manufacturers. We have different flavors of platforms that run in different manufacturers' devices. So with a Samsung product, you might get a Flash variation.
Mm-hmm.
But with LG, where I'm lucky enough to work, we work with WebKit. So whatever can run in WebKit of a certain version will run on our TVs. Now, the machines that run the TVs are slightly less powerful than an iPhone 3. But the screen, as you imagine, is slightly larger. So our processing power isn't what you'd expect. It's not a, we haven't got Xbox potential. We haven't got a gaming tower that sort of hums from heat beside us. The machines are...
And then Red Ring is that... That one. No Red Ring of Death.
No Ring.
You don't want that on your TV.
No. But the TVs are moving forward. As new manufacturers move into the connected TV space, which is sort of what the... I think it's the more public name for what we do. So we think of it as IPTV in the industry. But when we're trying to communicate that to people, it doesn't make any sense. So connected TVs are probably what you're going to be hearing if you're going to your JB Hi-Fi's or Dick Smith's. As more players come into the market, they drive the current players to pick up. So each different generation becomes easier to work with, gives us more opportunities, gives us a closer tie between the browser and the panel itself. And then also Widevine that Google now own are giving us a new delivery platform. So our adaptive technology there is that in the old video terminology, you'd plug in your stream and it would sort of grind away and slowly work out how fast you were going and then off you'd run. With Widevine, the adaptive potential is much greater. So that
Widevine's a bit like smooth streaming or something but it works in a just a different approach, effectively the same result.
It's a very similar result. It's like until we get to a point where we're less about the delivery method and more about the experience, we're going to be in trouble with connected TVs. With audio and video in general on the web, it's still one of those things that if you're coding HTML5 using the APIs for video, you've got to have four different streams for different platforms.
That's not many. It's only four.
It's four more than we need.
Only adds complexity where you don't want it.
Exactly.
That's all right. So the TVs themselves, the JavaScript engines that are on there, are they software or are they embedded into the CPU, like a chip on board kind of routine, or how are they done? Just curiosity.
It's not embedded. It's like
it's like a firmware.
It's exactly. It's inside the firmware, but it's deep in the firmware, similar to you'd get from a it's like a PC, but a really slow one.
So the manufacturers allow that to be flashed and updated?
Yeah.
But I
slowly. Then they're the ones in control of it. We can't do that. We can't push a firmware upgrade.
No, you would want the manufacturer doing that, obviously. It's their panel. But are they actively doing that, or are we going to end up in a situation where I buy a TV today and I get one of the new LG super sexy 3D things where I can get my baby pointing at the, you know, you've seen the ad, I'm sure, the baby pointing at the screen, the dad behind the thing going, hey, my baby's so smart. And then, you know, that's all that JavaScript side of things, I assume, that you're doing, or is that something else?
What do you mean?
The panel display, it shows like a picture and then it's got the you know, the guides and all those sort of things, and that's all.
There's a manufacturer area,
yep,
which is what you'll see when you first turn it on. If you move into our areas, then you've got a UI constructed out of web technology. And then we can move you inside that to different experiences. So we've got a TV area and movies.
Okay. So I buy the TV, that's all set up as it is today, and I think, oh, fantastic, this is great for where I'm at now. But given the internet moves so damn bloody fast,
sure,
in 3 years that's going to be outdated, but most TV panels are 10, 12, 15, 20 years old before the LCD fries itself and, you know, we end up chucking it on a thing and throwing it out. So in 15 years, you're still going to be trying to write software for things that haven't been flashed because no one ever plugged their TV. I don't know. I'm just trying to think. You know, TVs, are you going to end up with life cycle issues?
No. If the what generally happens is if the manufacturers don't change the firmware, then the interface won't change. So what we try and do is make the technology behind it solid, and that will endure. And if you move between years, between between years. That's 2020 interface looks very similar to the 2011 interface, even though the technology might be slightly different that's pulling it together. But the video you're looking at is consistent. So you won't be able to not watch your TV in 3 years' time, but you might not have a brand new UI. But
with IPTV, we're trying to stream the video across the internet instead of off the terrestrial network, I assume.
Yep.
Things like the smooth streaming or the what was it called again? The
Widevine.
That one.
That's the one.
Widevine, not broadband, Widevine. That technology is going to improve over time.
Sure.
So then what broadcasters will need to be broadcasting in raw H.264 format without that smooth streaming applied, and then other things happen? Or is this all client-side things happening? I'm just thinking from a, you know, a long-term point of view, we'll end up having 15 different video formats being broadcast, and you know, someone gets sick of H.264 and paying for their you know, the patent rights and all that sort of business because Firefox doesn't support it, and they all go start streaming DivX or something crazy. And I don't know. I'm just trying to toss up, you know, what would happen in the future and what that implies in terms of the software development cycle and trying to maintain an IPTV platform.
Well, from our perspective, because we're using HTML5 to create the environment for you to look at it in, we can update the environment very quickly. So if that change did come through, even though the firmware itself may not upgrade more than twice a year, if that may if their goal is they don't need to upgrade their firmware at all, obviously.
Yep.
Our opportunity then rests in taking up all the opportunities that their environment provides and opening those up to the viewers. So you'll see that we can change. We've got our footy and analyzers, so we've got an NRL analyzer and a AFL analyzer run through standard Windows Media format.
Okay.
So it's not just, we're not just locked into a single provider's video stream. We can play whatever we want. It comes down to what the broadcaster is transmitting.
So then the TV acts as a browser and it's got certain features, and then you're just doing feature detection inside the JavaScript to figure out what to enable?
Exactly.
Okay, so if new features turn up and TV's coming out with new things, then you're just going to go look for that and then do effectively graceful degradation or progressive enhancement to do...
Progressive enhancement, hopefully.
Yep.
So we're starting out with a good base already and then working onwards from there.
Okay. Out of curiosity, the HTML things at the moment with HTML5 audio, for instance, and needing to have, you know, two different formats and MP3 and OGG formats and all that sort of stuff... Do you see that as being something that will get resolved anytime soon?
Not soon.
Ever?
No.
Issue of open source browsers versus commercial.
We've still got Windows Media. We've still got QuickTime. They still exist in the same space. Yep. One of them became more popular than the other.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, like, there was just attrition.
Yep.
We'll see the same thing again.
And again and again. Exactly. And again and again. Forever. Forever. All right, slight change of subject again, because I love doing that, jumping around, I'm so random. The recent, I suppose, consolidation of, not consolidation, but the popularization of one JavaScript library over the top of everything else, the dominance of jQuery.
Yes.
Is that improving the adoption rate of JavaScript at the expense of variety? From what you've seen at all, you know, things like the, you know, the various UI platforms and UI libraries and so forth that have existed around JavaScript for a while that were all competing, and then jQuery just somehow became the most popular. Is it going to stifle any innovation around the JavaScript space?
I think that it may stifle the library development because the library is so good, but then we're also seeing Zepto out of Germany, I think. So Thomas Fuchs, you have to say his name very carefully.
Carefully.
who used to work with Prototype and Scriptaculous.
Yep.
Has brought out a cut-down version, which is called Zepto.
Okay.
It's currently targeted towards WebKit on the mobile browsers on iOS, but it can be used outside that environment. Now, that's grown while jQuery was in dominance. Backbone has come out. Node has come out. The non-traditional, not frameworks aren't necessarily coming out, but JavaScript innovation is still happening in different spaces. I'd like to think that it's because using a framework like jQuery, you can get things done quickly and then move on to the more difficult challenges.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something which we can consider. It's just the libraries have grown. They're more popular. Smart people are considering it as an opportunity now. So JavaScript's becoming more viable for determined developers.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are the ones who are innovating. So the innovation happens in a different space to the openness that jQuery allows. So jQuery makes development possible for a larger range of developers,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't really impact people who are doing the innovation.
Yep. And the rise of CoffeeScript over the last 18 months?
Yes.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, don't really care, whatever makes things easier for people?
Yes, definitely. Whatever tool you need to do to get your experience into the environment you want it to live in,
mm-hmm.
is good in my book. I've worked a little bit with CoffeeScript,
yep.
As many of the old JavaScript developers did, and I think it's unusual that it's picked up so strongly by guys who don't love JavaScript
because it reduces the number of times you see the word function.
It does.
Takes the noise out, right?
I like semicolons, though. They're nice.
White space significance doesn't drive you nuts.
I could never understand in the Java environment why they were so vehemently opposed. You hear that, you had jihads. You hear the guys who were talking about an indent is four spaces, or an indent is a tab.
Two, yeah.
Yeah, or
and
two.
All that. Yep.
White space is just, it's just white space. As long as it's not getting in the road of delivering what you want to achieve, mm-hmm. then white space or no way. I'm happy either way.
People walking past again. We needed a fishbowl or something, but a bit too much to organize for a day. Oh, gosh, we've got someone coming. We've got an audience all of a sudden. That's all right. We're closing up anyway. All right. So, Craig, other things, anything interesting you want to share? What are the new innovations you see coming through? So you mentioned Backbone. We've talked a little bit about some of the other things that are popping up. Are there other areas of JavaScript development that people should be paying attention to over the next 12 months?
No, there will be new things coming out. But if you get Node and you get the MVC attitude under mm-hmm. your belt, whether it's a backbone or a spine or something similar.
Yep. Sorry, spine?
A variation of backbone, obviously.
But it's trying to implement the same type
MVC,
of pattern.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, exactly. No, there's always things happening in JavaScript. It's weird that you think it's an old, dying language and it just keeps coming back with new life year after year. I remember in 2000 when one of my managers was sort of saying, "Oh, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?"
I love those conversations.
Yeah, and I was thinking I still want to be coding in JavaScript, and I still am. What is it now? 12 years later almost.
Yeah, I'll check my watch. Excellent. All right, well, anything you want to plug before we go?
Well, obviously, race out now and grab a T-box and get some connected TV action happening with Telstra. But definitely, if you love JavaScript and you're in Sydney, then
go
come along
to
CJS on the third Wednesday of the month. So next one is 20th of April.
April.
20th
Impressive.
Of July. We're that far ahead of time. 20th of July. And we need someone who loves JavaScript to write an application which will allow me to know what every third Wednesday of the month is. So if you're out there and you're bored, get coding.
That's your coding challenge, everyone. There you go. Go learn JavaScript and play around with calendars.
Exactly.
Just reference Google Calendar or something. That'll work. All right, Sharky, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been another episode of Talking Shop Down Under, live from DDD Sydney, and we will catch you next time. Until then, happy coding. See you later.
Visit talkingshopdownunder.com for previous shows or to subscribe to the feed. Your feedback is always very much appreciated, so get in touch and let us know what you're thinking. Reviews can be left on iTunes or the Zoom Marketplace. Email can be sent to mail@talkingshopdownunder.com and tweets to @talking_shop. That's it for now. Show's over. Go home, people. Go home.